Good morning, everyone. We're ready to proceed with the first case, Marshall versus CD. And is that Ms. or Mrs. Curry? Ms. Curry, you may proceed. And that's case number 091319.
Thank you. May it please the court. I am Joanne Harmon Curry, and I represent the Marshall Joint School District number 2. And I will be reserving 5 minutes of my 20 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, in this consolidated matter, our argument has 4 main points. 2 are related to the student's eligibility for special education services. The student did not meet the statutory criteria as a child with a disability under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, most commonly referred to as the IDEA. This ended his eligibility for special education services. We'll rely on our brief, however, for the other 2 points, both of which merit your attention and are related to the spending clause analysis and the court's determination of a reasonable hourly rate for the student's attorney should the student prevail in this matter. But the decisive point in this case is whether the student continued to need special education services because of his health condition. That determination was within the clear expertise of the school personnel.
Now, I'd like to ask this question initially. They tested the student here for various things, and they found her to place, or him rather, to place in the average or low average category. Now, why does that prove anything about whether he needs special education? Suppose he's a genius, and without having this ailment, he'd be in the 99th category. And he's now in the average category. So what? I don't really see why that proves anything about his eligibility for special education.
Well,
there's nothing in the statute about if you're average, you don't need the additional educational assistance, is there?
No, but, Your Honor, the statute does require that the student's performance be assessed, and it be assessed by educational professionals, and that his performance be assessed in the general curriculum. And school districts have curriculums that compare students to their same-age peers. And there are state and local...
If they're average, they're all right. Basic principle. Well, I mean, that's one way to go, but I'm not sure I understand the linkage between being average and requiring special education.
Well, special education is defined in the IDEA as specialized instruction. And what the courts look at, and this was first defined by the U.S. Supreme Court in Hendrick Board of Education of Henry Hudson Community Central School District versus Raleigh, 458 U.S. 176 in 1982. And in that, the U.S. Supreme Court indicated that the purpose of the IDEA was that students receive some benefit from their public education. And benefit in public education, as the Raleigh court indicated, is frequently measured by grades and students transfer from one level to the next grade level. The Second Circuit Court in J.D. versus Paulette School District, 224 F. 3rd 60 in 2000, indicated that appropriate measures of educational performance was performance when you compare the student to their peers. So if their performance is falling below their same-age peers, then that creates a concern that they are not benefiting from their instruction and might require specialized instruction in order to progress in the general curriculum.
Let me ask you this. How is it that the school district can objectively assess a child's academic performance when so many accommodations have been made, like in this case?
Your Honor, the type of accommodations that were provided to this student did not interfere with the objective measures of the student's performance. The educators conducted standardized assessments. They also had direct experience with the student. One of the educators, an adaptive physical education teacher, had worked with the student for 3 years. His second grade teacher had worked with him for 2 years. So they draw upon their experience and observations of the student. And this particular assessment also consisted of interviews that were conducted with some of his other teachers to look at some of his issues related to, for instance, attention.
It seems that the accommodations, what do you call this? Is that do we refer to them, what's going on generally?
They're generally referred to, Your Honor, in the briefing as accommodations. They fall under what the statute describes and identifies a term called supplementary aids and services.
Is that kind of a routine thing that you do for certain students that aren't necessarily labeled with special needs?
That's correct. That's what both the second grade teacher and the adaptive physical education teacher testified to. Matter of fact, they described the type of accommodations that they made in the regular classroom for the student in their minds was minor.
But those seem to be reasonably acceptable. There seems to be a lot of focus on the activities in the gym.
Yes, Your Honor.
And at least I see it, that seems to be where there's some bone of contention. You really notice a whole lot of complaints about whatever you want to call it. Now, I know the district court and I guess the ALJ looked at those, I'll call them accommodations, as I guess evidence that without those, the student wouldn't have been able to achieve as he did. But I think what you're saying is those are not exceptional. You don't need to be specifically labeled a student with a disability or whatever. What is the label that they want to add?
His condition?
No, the
a supplementary aids and services.
No, the one that the designation that they are seeking.
Oh, other health impairment as a category of disability.
Yeah, and if these accommodations are done without having to have that label, I guess that's what your argument is, and that as far as the gym class is concerned, those accommodations seem to be where most of this is focused. There seems to be a lot of attention paid to what he can and can't do to help him out.
To pay attention to his health.
What would the adding the impairment and raising his, I guess, profile under this act, what would that do in addition to what you're doing now? Or what would he have to gain by your not getting your way here today? I'm not asking the question very well because I'm not good at the definitions here. Yeah. I don't want to use a wrong word.
What would the student have to gain?
Yes.
If he were not? If he were. Well, the student's brief indicated that they felt that he had a right to the procedural safeguards that come under the eligibility for under the IDEA. However, in response to your comments, let me first of all say that the court should apply the plain reading of the IDEA in understanding this case. The IDEA does define what special education is, and it defines it under Section 1401, the definitional terms, as specialized instruction. It also defines as a distinct service that is provided to eligible students supplementary aids and services. And supplementary aids and services are defined as supports that are provided to a student in the regular classroom. And in the discussion of the type of accommodations that are made for this student, they fall under the type of supports that are given to students in the regular classroom. And certainly the teachers that had him in both physical education class and the second grade class testified that these were not extraordinary or out of the normal kinds of accommodations they would make. And if I might give
What difference does it make whether you're classified as special education or not? With this argument, you're saying, well, we provide this anyway. I don't understand what's special education and what isn't special or whether it makes any difference. I don't understand why this is such a big issue.
If I may, Your Honor, special education is specialized instruction, and I will give an example of a distinction between a teacher who is specialized and has received the training to teach skills and knowledge and content to students with disabilities.
Define what special education services are, because that's what they're seeking, correct?
Yes.
Okay, versus what they're getting now, which is supplementary aids and services. Okay, so I think that's what we're struggling with here. What's the definition of special education services? What's the definition of supplementary? And can he be accommodated in terms of the GEM issue that my colleague Judge Mannion raised under supplementary aids and services? Why does he need to be in special education? What do you get for that?
Okay. If I could use an illustration to make the distinction between what is special education services and what is supplementary aids and services. As an example, in physical education class, which is a functional part of the curriculum, students are taught to throw a ball, and they are taught to throw a ball at a target. When the teacher in the classroom teaches a student to throw the ball, they are providing instruction. When the teacher permits the student or directs the student to take a rest break, the teacher is not involved in instruction. There is no teaching and learning that is occurring while the student is taking a rest break. And that's the primary distinction. The student's accommodations were put in place to prevent joint injury because he has a joint condition. So they were preventative in nature, and to avoid pain by having him restrict his physical activities at times, and in particular during certain times of the physical education class. The regular education teacher is able to direct the student or permit the student, without altering her instruction, to take a break or allow him to take a break. That same teacher can ask the student to run 3 laps around the gym instead of 5 because his physicians have advised that he should not be required to engage in running activities that might over-fatigue him during the day. So
what would happen if he's got special education?
If he had special education, what would occur is what occurred for him during his first 3 years of eligibility. When he was determined eligible for special education services, when he was 4 years old, the educational team determined at that time that, number one, he had motor delays. His motor skills were below that you would expect for other kids his age. They also determined that he had very poor body coordination, which is an important skill when you're doing physical education activities. And they felt that he needed specialized instruction from a special educator in order to learn how to coordinate his legs and feet with his arms when he's throwing or batting a bat.
Would that be done separately from the rest of the PE class?
It can be, and it frequently was. He was receiving one-on-one instruction from the adaptive physical education teacher, who is a special education teacher. They also wanted to teach him how to participate safely during the physical education class. So part of his goals was to teach him the type of physical activities that the doctors identified might produce undue stress on his joints.
But he would have, in that juncture where he's commingled with the other class, he would still have a special education person monitoring him.
He did, yes.
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 So that seems to be the difference.
It is.
What your school is recommending here on, that he's sufficiently integrated into, or mainstream, or whatever, with the rest of them, where with these accommodations that you're doing, are sufficient to keep him, keep up with what he's able to do, as opposed to having to have a one-on-one.
Are you going to continue the accommodations, or remove the accommodations now that, assuming he were reclassified?
The student might be eligible now under Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act. Last year, Congress amended the Americans with Disabilities Act, and the amendments went into effect January 1st of this year. They incorporated, by reference, the definitional changes into Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act. Now, should an evaluation team under Section 504 be convened. They may no longer consider what is called mitigating measures in determining eligibility under Section 504. And in fact, the ADA specifically identifies reasonable accommodations as mitigating measures.
By whom, though? Is that in the normal course of things, or does that require some kind of a separate supervision when you do those accommodations under the new law or whatever it is?
It does not require special education. The difference between Section 504 and IDEA is that a student can receive accommodations without the need for special ed or specialized instruction from a special ed teacher. And I see that I have entered my rebuttal time.
That's okay. And I have a question then. Just assuming everything stays the same, then under this new definition, and I know this is hypothetical and this is you're not committing the school district, would he then qualify, would he be classified such that he would receive special education services versus supplemental aids and services? Since under this definition, you can't look at all these accommodations and bring him up to par, so to speak. In other words, enable to mainstream into a regular classroom.
Yes, Your Honor. The main difference between Section 504 and the IDEA is that the child does not need specialized instruction. But in order to get access to the public school curriculum and the school environment, they might need these types of accommodations, which are health care needs, which the school would have an obligation to provide him. So they can provide him with the rest breaks and the recliner in the second grade class and the pencil grip to reduce fatigue when he's writing, similar to what he's getting now. And I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Ms. Curry.
Thank you.
Is it Ms. or Mrs. Novotnak? And did I pronounce it correctly?
Ms. Novotnak.
All right.
Good morning, Your Honors and Counsel. May it please the Court. I'd like to address two of the Court's questions to the District's Counsel before I start my own argument. As is indicated in the briefing, when CD was removed from special education, he was denied a 504 plan. So any speculation
that he was denied what?
A 504 plan under the Rehab Act. Counsel speculation about the changes in the law is really speculation. It hasn't been addressed by the district, and it's not in the record. Secondly,
just to go back, though, in terms of your interpretation of the change, would it be your view, since they couldn't take into account supplemental aids, what's been done now to mainstream him, that he might qualify as for special education under the new definition?
Your Honor, it's my opinion that he qualified in 2007.
I understand that.
And certainly I think he would qualify now. In answer to why is there special education, essentially, the district's brief pointed out, the purpose of the 1997 amendments to the IDEA, which actually predate the most recent amendments, which were in 2004, provide that the purpose is to place greater emphasis on improving student performance and ensuring that children with disabilities receive a quality public education. It's a remedial act. It's intended to ensure that those children who have special needs in our school districts get those needs met. It is not that the intention of the amendments was not to allow school districts to reevaluate children, those same children, out of their entitlement.
What is he not getting? That he would by not being saying he needs special education. What is he missing?
What he would not be getting if.
Or what is he getting now if he's got the designation? Because I'm not sure where you all have drawn the line at this point.
Well,
back to the second grade or something on this, don't we?
That's right. The 2000.
He's in fourth grade now, right?
He's in fifth grade now.
Fifth grade. Okay.
The 2000. Early January 2006 IEP is the one that's in effect, and that IEP provided for specialized instruction in physical education, a panoply of what we do not consider to be minor supplementary aids and services and assistive technology, which may very well be very helpful for any number of children but are necessary for CD.
No, that's you saying those are exceptional. They're saying they're, I don't want to call them routine, but they don't require special education to do what they're doing.
That's what they provide.
That's what they say, and you say that that's special education accommodation.
It is in part special education accommodation. In order to be eligible, I agree with the district that first the child needs to have an impairment that requires specialized instruction. And for CD, that need is, as the district court found, in physical education. The physical education, the content and delivery of his physical education program is within the, is in fact defined as adaptive physical education, which the district court found. And that solidifies his entitlement to, and that solidifies his entitlement to special education and then related services and modifications and adaptations and assistive technology. The district has not in any of its briefing really addressed the law on what constitutes adaptive physical education. It asserts that what has been provided, which are things like not having him participate in some activities and having him sit out in some activities and having him do less stressful tasks in some activities, that those are things that a good teacher would simply do for anyone, any child who needed that, those modifications. But in fact, what the PE, the specialized PE teacher did was she modified his curriculum because, as the law says, a child who is not able to safely participate in an unaltered PE curriculum is entitled to adaptive PE.
Is adaptive PE mean push-ups off the wall as opposed to push-ups or lesser jumping jacks? Or
it can be part of that.
But does that, is the difference that she would or he would have a separate special ed teacher monitoring him as opposed to, what was the name of the woman that's the PE teacher?
Pingle, Stephanie Pingle.
Ms. Pingle, in addition to Ms. Pingle, somebody else would be there that's specially trained to monitor him?
Not necessarily. Stephanie Pingle is a certified adaptive PE teacher, and she, under the current IEP, the one that was in effect since January of 2006, that IEP required that she interact with his regular ed teachers on a regular basis. So
he seems to, at least as far as she's concerned, he's doing okay under her. Am I missing something? Is she complaining, saying that she can't do enough, or what?
Ms. Pingle's position was he's able to do all of the things that all of the kids are able to do. What she did not address is the fact that he shouldn't be doing all of the things that the other children are able to do. And because he shouldn't be, because his Ehlers-Danlos syndrome can cause him to have lifelong irreparable injury if he overextends his joints, he needs to have monitoring and modification because by every account, not only of the expert witnesses, the medical providers, but also of the school district's witnesses, the occupational therapist and the physical therapist, he should not be participating in the regular PE curriculum.
So he does need separate. He needs separation, then, I guess you're saying.
No, it's not our position necessarily that he needs separation. What he does need is modification of that curriculum to fit his particular needs.
Is it fair to say that these accommodations that were accorded him under the special education program were required by law and mandated. And if he's taken off of that regime, and some of them may be accorded to him because some teacher thinks they're good practice, but they'll no longer be mandated by law or required. Is that a fair distinction?
Yes, Your Honor, it's a very fair distinction. Without an IEP, this court has said and I'm paraphrasing, but in prior special ed cases, the IEP is the law for that child. And without an IEP, the school district has no federal obligation or state obligation under special ed law to provide that child with any of the remedial modalities that are important for that child to have an adequate education.
The position, it seems to me, is, this may be exaggerating a little bit, that, well, we're good teachers and we do what has to be done anyway. I don't know how realistic all that is, but that seems to be partly what's being argued here.
Your Honor, I would agree with that. And as indicated in our brief, Congress long ago created a system whereby disabled children don't have to depend on the good sense of their teachers and school administrators.
Is there more money involved in this designation? I mean, does the school get more money for maybe another teacher or something if he's given this classification?
There are two answers to that question. The first is, what does it cost the school? And the second is, does the school get reimbursement for those costs? In the present case, other than the value of the time of the adaptive PE teacher, the occupational therapist, and the physical therapist, who are all on school staff, the program didn't cost the school anything. There are federal monies available passed through the states to districts for special ed children. One of the chronic complaints of school districts is they don't get enough, that it's not, that the pass-through isn't enough to meet their costs. There isn't an analysis of what that might be in this case. The fact is, this program didn't, as I say, other than the time of those staff members, did not cost the school district anything.
Let me ask you this. So it's your position that this adaptive PE can never be a supplemental aid and services, that should always fall under special education?
That's correct, because that's the definition of special education in the law.
And so accommodations, which would fall under supplementary aids and services, this plan that they devised from him, they have devised for him, or this proposed going forward mode, in your opinion, would not be a supplementary aid and service? You know, because it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, whatever that little saying is. You're saying that if all that's true, that in other words, everything is part of it, because they're saying that this adaptive PE plan they have is something that will continue, even though he's not categorized as special education. So, you know, that's why I'm wondering, you know, I mean, it seems to me your position is that is not a supplementary aid in service, just because of the nature of what that plan is.
I would agree with that. The adaptive PE is not a supplementary aid in service. It is a form of special education. The district and the parents depart from the analysis in that supplementary aids and services, assistive technology, those other, for example, with this child, frequent bathroom breaks, extra time to complete academics, motor and self-help tasks, checking for understanding, providing directions and problems orally, visuals such as number lines and schedules, fine motor adaptations, tape recorder, dictation, and limited writing assignments, using a floor rocker to help conserve his energy and reduce his pain, special chair at work tables and a slant board, and adaptive writing tools as positioning aids, program modifications consistent with consultation between the adaptive PE teacher and the regular PE teacher, and consultation between the occupational therapist, physical therapist, and special area teachers, 15 minutes a month. Those are programmatic parts of his special education entitlement. Not like related services. Related services, a child only gets if they're in special education and you have to have the needs for these other services. But like the child in the Eighth Circuit case, Tracy Tram, in her high school years, when she had accomplished gotten all the credits that she needed to graduate in special education or in physical education, because her entree into the special ed entitlement was the physical education part, the school district determined that she didn't need special education anymore. The fact is, though, that because she had significant functional impairments, like the child in this case, such as carrying her books, which get heavier after the second grade and more voluminous, an extra set of books so she could have them at home so she wouldn't stress her joints, help getting from floor to floor. There are many kinds of modifications and assistive technologies and other kinds of accommodations and supplementary aids and services that, in addition to, for this child, adaptive physical education, that all comprise part of his special education program. And
aren't they calling what he's got now modifications?
Not all of them, Judge.
Are there some that require being designated special education in order for him to get those services or those benefits? Some of what he's getting now or then, I'm not sure what time we're talking now, right, frankly.
Occupational therapy, physical therapy, adaptive PE, those are all...
I think that whole list you just recited.
The other list?
The one you went through about the... I can't go through it again. But the things I thought he was getting now...
They're called supplementary aids and services on the IEP.
And you call them special education needs.
I do call them special education needs.
It seems to me we're doing the same thing and just defining it differently.
There has been a lot of use of various terms, accommodations, modifications.
I have a lot of trouble. I don't want to use the wrong word because a lot of these words are generic, and yet in this context they... mean something, and you start slicing along whether, you know, impairment, disability, you know, you get into all this stuff. And I just see what the school is trying to say, I think, is that they're doing everything that he now needs, including the way Miss Pinkle treats him at PE. I don't know if she still teaches him or not, but I don't know. But this is the trouble. We're going back in time, and we're not talking about him as a fifth grader, so I don't know where we are, but...
Go ahead. Answer Judge Mania's question, then I have a question. Go ahead.
I think that the most significant word is adaptive in relation to adaptive PE, and the district court's decision found that the way Ms. Pingle and Dr. Schrammick explained what they were doing, it constituted, in fact, adaptive PE, and that's a special education entitlement.
Now, the physical therapist found that although he needed those modifications to participate in PE, he didn't need adaptive PE, which is that specially designed instruction for children with disabilities to help them develop motor skills necessary to perform within PE. My understanding is when he was designated, that the whole point in those 3 years was to help him deal with his motor skills and to help him coordinate and that kind of thing. And so when this new assessment was made, there was a determination that he had certain motor skills, that there had to be a modification for him to attend PE. Those modifications had to continue, but that he didn't need this adaptive PE. So do you quarrel with that sort of definition?
We would quarrel with the limitation of the need for adaptive PE to be simply whether he's been able to develop the gross motor skills that are acquired in the second grade curriculum, because this child will have lifelong struggles with joint protection, pain, and fatigue, and therefore, as he grows, he will continue to need modifications to any physical program in which he participates.
And the district does do, and I understand you don't have the same protections if he's designated in special education, but children that need these modifications, their situation is reviewed, or is it reviewed on a regular basis?
It is reviewed on a regular basis.
So then,
if they're in special education.
Yeah, but if they're not in special education and they're getting the supplemental aids and services, you're saying those are not reviewed by the district periodically?
There's no requirement that I know of, unless there's a 504 plan, which this child was also not getting. There's no requirement that any of that be reviewed on any kind of regular basis.
So how is it then that these supplemental aids and services occur? I mean, at some point, isn't there? I mean, does the parent can make a request and say, my child is having an issue, you know, I have a doctor's note or whatever, we need some kind of modification. Can it be done just at the request of the parents? Is it more of an ad hoc process?
I don't know of any. I've never had experience with those kinds of supplemental aids and services being provided to any non-special ed child. And I think the district's position is we do it anyway because we're good educators, and you know, we'll review it as our good graces and sense tell us to do that.
Just let me follow up on that just a little bit, because it keeps focusing on this. With this designation, it sounds like the district's going to be doing the same thing, only this time they have to, instead of doing it because they think it's the right thing to do.
I would hope that it would be both. I would hope that the district would do it both because they have to and because it's the right thing to do. When the district's council was asked what the advantages are to the student of being in special education, there are many, but procedural safeguards are a very big one. This contested hearing went on for 8 days, and obviously there was quite a contest between what the school was doing and what it should have been doing. Without the designation of special education, those procedural due process rights are gone for these parents.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Novotnik.
Thank you.
All right. How much time?
3 minutes.
3 minutes.
Your Honors, children go to school to learn. They learn skills and knowledge, and they learn that from teachers. That's the teaching-learning process. And in the 1992 federal regulations, when the Department of Education defined special education, at note 1, it stated that the definition of special education is particularly important because without the need for special education services or specialized instruction from a special education teacher, the child is not eligible. So we would urge the court to rely on the text of the IDEA that does define these terms and does require extensive procedural compliance by the district in order to meet its obligations under the Act. They did use highly qualified special education teachers and therapists to conduct the assessment. The educators concluded that this student did not require special education. The student's condition results in some needs at school outside of learning, knowledge, and skills in the curriculum that must be accommodated to prevent injury. His accommodations are used to prevent injury and pain and fatigue. It is not to ameliorate problems in learning. And that is a key distinction between those two terms. The student does not receive supplementary aids and services in the form of an individual program unless he does require special education services.
So then this...
Is it the obligation of the school to protect the child from injury as much as to teach him something?
Absolutely, Your Honor, and I would like to speak to that. I see that... Oh, I have 1 minute. Yeah. The school district has several options when working with children with health impairments. First of all, the number of children with health impairments has more than doubled between 1999 and 2007. It includes children with arthritis and asthma and a wide variety of conditions. First of all, schools in Wisconsin are required to have a school nurse. What typically will happen, and I will give the example of a child with rheumatoid arthritis, who the student's occupational therapist compared this student's joint condition to. The parents will notify the school nurse that the child has health care needs. The school nurse will arrange to talk with the student's health care providers, and there will be a meeting between the parent and the teacher and the nurse, and they will develop what is called an individualized health plan, and that is what has occurred for this student. Now, the reason that the district... I see my time is up. May I continue? Okay. The reason that the district would do this is because... First of all, they would want to ensure that the child's health needs are protected while he is at school. But also, under the doctrine of in loco parentis, they have an obligation to take care of the student while he is at school. And they want to prevent injury, because if there is a personal injury of the student while he is at school and they were negligent, then they would be liable for any injury that would occur. And that's a compelling reason why districts don't do this just altruistically. They are trying to safeguard the student while he is at school, where he is compelled to be under compulsory education laws.
And so someone falling under this individual health plan would be eligible for these supplementary aids and services.
Absolutely.
And then in terms of a regular review of the individual health plan, is there a regular review of that plan?
Yes, Your Honor.
How does that review come about?
The school nurse at the Marshall School District, and this is probably not in the record, but the school nurse meets with the parents at the beginning of each school year. And if there is an existing health plan, then they will review the plan to see if there are any health needs that have changed for the student. Might I also add that if a student is terminated from special education and his eligibility under the IDEA, that at any time under Wisconsin law, the parent may request a new evaluation, or the professionals may determine that his progress has worsened in the curriculum and that they feel that he now requires the assignment of a special education teacher. And when you were discussing the funding, personnel costs are, of course, the most expensive part of the special education program. And the federal funding only provides for 20% of the total cost that school districts put into serving children with disability. So we do believe that the district court gave an overly expansive interpretation of the scope of eligibility for children with health impairments.
And I had one final quick question. This adaptive PE, which we've been going back and forth on, do you have a different view on that as to how that relates to supplementary aids and services?
No. Well, adaptive physical education is special education. It's special education in physical ed, in the physical education classroom. It requires that a student has to learn the skills of the PE curriculum with some kind of specialized instruction. So it is different than accommodations in the form of supplementary aids and services, which the student can and would still be able to get.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Curry. Thank you both, counsel, for your fine arguments and briefs. We'll take the case under advisement.